Right, so you're welcome back to the programme. Tomorrow morning we are broadcasting live from Dunloe as part of the Murray from Dunloe International Arts Festival. We'll be located from 9 a.m. in Supervalue. So call in and say hello. We'd love to see you there. And that's throughout the day between 9 and 12. Some comments here. Joe is 100% right, Greg. This will not be happening. Best case scenario, we'll have a railway in 26 years. I'm 48 now. I'll be an old man if I make it. If I get a chance to sit in a train in Letterkenny, the country is a joke. Border counties are paying to improve Dublin and its surrounding areas. I don't ever think I'll sit on a train. I'm not going to lie to you, out of Letterkenny. I wish people would pay attention to and think about what Joe Kelly is saying and explaining figures-wise. Percentages-wise, we should all use our vote accordingly. These great so-called plans and projects into the future, they're airy-fairy tales to hoodwink the people. A train goes from Dublin to Sligo. If there are buses going into Derry and they're not using it, why would they use a train? The train needs to go from Malin Head to Sligo to Kerry to Cork. Another, if you want to house, just claim refugee status. Northern Ireland has 3 gold medals. Oh, these are 2 different ones. If you want to house, just claim refugee status. And then a second one, Northern Ireland has 3 gold medals. Ireland only has 1 bronze. What are they doing better than us? I don't know. Well, I mean, it depends too on which country. It depends too on which, we are an island of Ireland. And it depends too, I suppose, on which country people declare to enter the Olympics under. Nobody wants to admit the truth that so many coming into the country is fueling the housing crisis. It's putting pressure on our housing stock. The only thing, obviously it's going to exacerbate the situation and increase pressure, but we've had a housing crisis for ages, long before the most recent focus on immigration. The real reason why houses aren't being built is that the government have prioritised data centres over building homes. But the data centres being built by, I presume you're on about sort of electricity and water and what have you, because obviously the data centres are built privately, but maybe you're on about the infrastructure. Airbnb houses are not occupied every week, so that woman's figures are wrong. People don't want to rent privately because of all the horror stories of not being able to get their property back, tenants not paying rent, etc. Another on that issue, the main thing is landlord fears, or our landlord fears, is a situation occurring whereby a tenant will not vacate a property in the event they stop paying the rent. If the government gave more rights to a landlord in the event of this happening, it would be better. So that's the main reason why people don't want private tenants. And listen, I've spoken to a lot of people, and they're not all rich. You know, there's a lot of people with a second house that aren't necessarily rich. Maybe they inherited it. Maybe they don't trust the pension system and that's their investment for their children into the future. And this is where I sort of get a little bit cautious about taxing people to determine what they do with their own property, presuming that everyone that has two houses, I don't, by the way, but everyone that has two houses is rich. But I do also believe that things seem to be stacked against landlords. That's from what landlords say to me, but I'm open to correction and education in relation to that. Another caller says, incentivize people to convert their garages for family or to rent. Treat people the way you like to be treated yourself, and you won't go too far or wrong in life. Look after the pennies and the pounds will look after themselves. That's 2 separate comments there again. Yeah, I mean, you could argue that maybe the derelict property grant could be extended to outbuilding the garages. There are strict rules in relation to what can be done with them. So maybe that is a plan. The only thing is a lot of garages are close to houses. And not everyone has them either, of course. But a lot of garages are close to houses and maybe wouldn't make suitable accommodation, especially if it wasn't people you know, or even worse, if you did know them. Good morning, Greg. Why do media call theories proven or unproven conspiracy theories and not just theories? Gravity is a theory that's never been proven, believe it or not, and it's not called a conspiracy theory. I don't know. I mean, conspiracy theory nowadays, a conspiracy theorist it's an insult, or it's used as an insult. That's why I was trying to avoid the use of it in the front of that paper. I think if people have concerns and they believe something to be true, well, give people more information, allow them to make up their own minds. Some of them can be a little bit off the wall, but, you know, conspiracy theory is now become a dirty word. There are so many so-called conspiracy theories that some of them have to be correct. And indeed, some of them have been proven to be correct. What was once a conspiracy theory, I think it's not good for the media. On certain issues, and certain things are obviously the way they are, right? But I don't think it's ever good that a media outlet, a paper, a radio station, or what have you, their default position is what the government say is completely true. I don't think that's useful. I don't think that's useful for democracy or media. So that article earlier on today presumes that everything that the government says and publishes is true, and that if you believe otherwise or you believe something else, that you're a conspiracy theorist. And I don't think it's good journalism. It's probably not journalism. And I think people should respect everybody's views, you know, certainly within reason. Right, so we are heading into the August bank holiday, and traditionally, unfortunately, weekends that have a public holiday, we tend to see more carnage on our roads, be they fatalities or serious injuries. And we do time and time again do a pre-public holiday weekend road safety message in the hope that it lands. And who's to say it doesn't land? I'm sure it does. Some people, it might make a difference. And that's why we do it, with the assistance of Inspector Seamus McMonagall, who's the head of the Garda Traffic Corps in County Donegal. Inspector McMonagall, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Greg. And thank you for giving us the opportunity again to highlight the dangers on the road this time of year. And especially, as you say, on a bank holiday weekend, when there's such an increase in the volume of traffic on the road, people are in holiday mode, they're somewhat relaxed a little. And also then the fact that a lot of the time they're driving in roads to be unfamiliar with. So we've been making a particular appeal to people to slow down and be sensible, be responsible on the roads in this coming weekend.
And it's kind of anecdotal, but we get an awful lot in this programme. And the stats seem to back it up in terms of, you know, mobile phone use, distracted driving. 40% of people under 35 will go on TikTok or Instagram whilst driving. A survey of motorists found that 1 in 10 were on their phones. Before that, it was a greater number. And then you have detection, so drink and drug driving, particularly non-wearing of seatbelts. I struggle to wonder how we're going backwards. It's not because of the efforts of the likes of yourself to get the message out there, but you do wonder how we seem to be going backwards with our behaviour on the roads.
Well, one thing you do mention is the distraction devices. We always spoke of mobile phones, but it's not just mobile phones. There are many other items in a car nowadays that can distract you. And I say, cars are a lot safer from an engineering perspective nowadays, but there, at the same time, there are devices that you're scrolling up and down the screen.
40-inch screens.
Yeah, and you're actually looking from side to side. Anything that lets you take your eyes off the road, any distraction that lets you take your eyes off the road, it's a serious danger, a serious impediment to safe driving.
You've visited the scene of many road traffic collisions, many involving young people, people of all generations, multiple occupancy crashes. Because of the time of the day and because it's radio, it's hard to get perhaps the message across as to what that's like in that moment, what people go through in the immediate aftermath of a road traffic collision. But you've seen that firsthand. I'm sure there's part of you would almost want everyone to see what you've seen.
To an extent,
do you get where I'm coming from?
And indeed, unfortunately, I have been at a lot of those fatal accidents or fatal collisions, especially over the last few years. And there's nothing that can stop you in your tracks, like seeing a person or a youngster in particular lying in a bag, literally in a body bag on the side of a road. It's a horrific sight for anyone. I know a lot of people give credit to emergency services who deal with those matters, and rightly so, and we thank people for that. But it's not what we go through is nothing compared with the friends and families we'll go through for the rest of their lives. Because it's an absolute life sentence. When somebody's killed in one of these collisions, a lot of the time when there's no good reason for it, if the truth be known, and yet that their parents, their siblings, their extended families, friends, neighbours, they all have a life sentence ahead of them because that person is gone and not to come back.
And a lot of it comes down to decisions that we make. And it could be a decision in a moment, you know, the curiosity to check that message. And that in that split second that you reach over to the passenger seat for the car and look back up again. And that car that was, you know, 15 cars in front of you, next thing it's a foot in front of you. Or that overtaking manoeuvre that you said, stuff it, I'll try it. And you're approaching that corner and next thing this other car comes in your direction, and there's no way of avoiding it.
I haven't got the figures in front of me, but it's by taking your eye off the road for a second, you travel two or three car lengths, and things can happen. If you take your eyes off the road at all, because for any distraction, you're increasing the danger to yourself and others on the road. So the message we like to get across is don't be distracted. Keep your eyes on the road at all time.
There is an extensive God operation. Today's actually Amber Thursday, and it leads into the holiday weekend. Talk to us about what you and your colleagues will be up to this weekend.
Well, as ever in bank holiday weekends, there's an increase of visibility, an increase of checkpoints out there. So there will be more guards on the road, performing speed checks, performing mid checkpoints where they can pull you in the side of the road and ask you to provide a specimen of your bet, without any other suspicion. So it should be noticeable to the public that there will be more guards out there, and there will be very strict enforcement.
And, you know, statistics will reflect that on Tuesday morning, yeah, in terms of drinking, drug detection, speeding detections and what have you. We just hope that we're not talking about fatalities. You know, life is so fleeting. It can be so fleeting. You know, you could say to someone, you could arrange, you know, that you've got a family trip on Monday, today, and one wrong decision tomorrow, and instead of that family function, you're actually at a funeral. That's how, unfortunately, and I've seen it myself, that's how life can change in the blink of an eye. But we can avoid much of it.
It's that stark. And it's all like, there's enforcement, education, engineering are the factors involved in most collisions. But we like to think that education is probably the most important of all. Because, again, thanking you for the opportunity here to speak in Highland this morning, we have to get that message across. We have to educate people. I know it's repetitive, but we want people to slow down, to drive at an appropriate speed, and not to be distracted for whatever reason, be it mobile phones or whatever other devices. And education does work. Because I go back to my times as 20, 25 years ago as a guard, and really and truly, there were so many people out there not wearing seatbelts. And whatever chance you had of a driver wearing a seatbelt, the backseat passengers never had. And I so clearly remember that in those days. Mm. But that's changed, in fairness now. Albeit we still aren't at 100%, but there's 95% plus compliance. Yeah. And that's purely down to education. It's purely down to getting that message across. And I would also like to think another success in that sense is with drink driving. Yes, there are the figures are still high and far too high, don't get me wrong at all. But it's now less socially acceptable than it was in the past. And that message has got across and it has saved lives. If you want to, you know, put this down the bottom line, it has saved lives. Mm-hmm. Wearing seatbelts does save lives.
But what's happened is in terms of the drink driving and seatbelt wearing, listen, that work will never end. Mm. What's happened now is the mobile devices have come into the cars. Mm. Drugs now are more prevalent, sadly are more prevalent. We've got to the stage now almost where we see more drug detections on a weekend than we see of drink detections, or there's certainly a parity there as well. And the way we have to do things in this country, and I understand that, if there's a tragic crash this weekend, there's no, we can't determine what caused it. We can't really mention speed because it would be disrespectful. Even if the Gardaí know there was distracted driving involved, we can't talk about that. If the car was overfilled or modified in some way, that's not mentioned because it's not appropriate to do so. So what happens is we talk like this, then an event happens, and there are contributing factors, and we can't talk about it at that time. And then we talk. Do you get where we're coming from?
It's a sterile conversation to some extent.
I think what I'm trying to do is try and put our heads, the stuff we're talking about now, into the context of a tragedy that we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, exactly. As I say, it's a sterile conversation we're having that we can't get into specifics, but the general points never change. And them being, and again, I repeat them again, is to slow down, to drive at an appropriate speed. And that's for you and myself, Greg, as much as anybody else. We kind of speak, that's for others. We should all slow down. Mm. Should everyone, and always make sure we drive at an appropriate speed. And as mentioned in the distraction device, that's kind of a new thing, really. And that if you go back 10, 15 years ago, it wouldn't be the same use of mobile phones or other devices. So that's, again, education. We want to get that message across. And we have to do it over and over again. Mm-hmm. You're right also in terms of drug driving. Again, the legislation's only in, I think, roughly 4 years at this stage. But again, there has been a huge increase in drug driving. There's no question about it. And it's a serious issue out there. And again, the enforcement, I can assure you we're there on the enforcement side. But we want education is as important, if not more important, is to get the message across at every opportunity.
Yep. Listen, I'm going to cut some of these conversations and also place them on, you know, some of the social media where younger people are more prevalent than others, okay? So I'm kind of conscious that we've got a fantastic listenership to Highland Radio. Mm-hmm. It's probably, for the most part, over 35. Mm-hmm. This message is for everybody, but it might not necessarily be heard by the people that we're talking to, those newly licensed, you know, those under the age of 35. So I think there's a role for mums and dads, granny and granddads listening, and there's some quite good ads from the RSA, in fairness to them, about it, to have the conversation, saying, listen, I was listening to Inspector McMonagall there, and just relate some of what we're saying so that it gets to all the ears.
If I could just say, in terms of young people in particular, peer pressure is such an important thing. You know, like at times I see 3, 4, and maybe 5 young people in the car, and you just think, oh no, and they're doing nothing wrong whatsoever, but just it brings back memories, brings back images to me. Just, and if you're one of those people getting in, and you're a young person getting into the car with your friends, just make sure that you don't encourage them by your actions or by your inactions. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure they're sensible. Everybody's sensible, that everybody gets to where you want to go. And there's nothing to be gained from showing off in a car.
Yeah. And also too, you know, you've gone through your lessons and your tests and all that kind of stuff, and you pass your tests, and that's fine. But you probably could be driving the car for the first time with 4 or 5 people in it, and a car behaves completely differently, you know, depending on the age of the car as well, and the roads and what have you, and maybe a little bit of extra speed. So, do you know, like, people aren't prepared for how a car might behave with that extra weight in it as well. Again, another good reason to sort of avoid that. But I think you're right too, that sometimes we have to call it out, don't we, that the passenger, the backseat passenger or what have you, and sort of say, look, at there's too many in the car, or look, at you've had a drink, or look, at we'll get a taxi. You know what I mean?
It's especially the case, as for young people, that somebody is brave enough to say, slow down, put your seatbelts on, or wait a minute, there isn't room for 5 people in this car. I'll wait, get a taxi, whatever. But you know, we are dependent on the actual young people themselves to act responsibly. It's not just the drivers we're speaking about here, it's the entire cohorts of people.
Yeah, okay. So listen, I kind of say this, but I just want it to land home. And I'm speaking to myself and my family at the same time in this. We have the potential to avoid a fatal collision this weekend, whereby a person's life is lost, a family, community devastated, or a serious injury, life-changing injury, where someone's life can change in an instant. Sometimes things happen, but there's an awful lot we can do ourselves in terms of listening to you, Inspector, to sort of mitigate against that. And we can never prove how successful or not it has been, but we can just hope that we get through to Tuesday. I'm back in this seat, and it's not with a family absolutely devastated or torn apart off the back of an avoidable tragedy.
That's the very important bottom line in all this, Greg. As just in terms of getting that message across, we reiterate that message again and again for people just to slow down and behave responsibly on the road.
All right, anything finally you want to add, Seamus?
No, it's just, again, to re-emphasise the fact about distraction devices in young people. The young people in particular, the stats are there to show that a very high proportion of them are using social media when they're actually driving. Yeah. And that's just a complete and utter no-no. Yeah. I can't think of anything more dangerous than that.
We've all seen the TikToks, we've all seen the Snapchats where the person's actually driving the car on the phone, let alone checking things. So, I've been driving a long time. You can't take your eyes off the road for a second. You really, really can't.
No, absolutely.
Okay, hopefully, Inspector, we get through the weekend with no families and no individuals lost in the first instance or devastated subsequently. We really appreciate you coming in and helping us get that message across.
I would just say in one terms too, we don't use the word accidents anymore, because there are very few of these occurrences which are actually accidents. It's down to driver behaviour in so many instances. And we just appeal to everybody, every driver out there, to be sensible and drive appropriately.
Yeah, indeed. And be conscious of cyclists out the road. There's caravans and there's tractors and there's lots of different traffic on the road as well. And we were talking to a professional driver during the week. Patience, you know, that's another thing. Patience.
It can be in short demand.
Short demand, but just wait till that corner passes or wait till it's not a double white line or whatever it might be. All right, as always, Inspector Seamus McGonagall, Head of Garda Traffic Corps in Donegal, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, hopefully this might be relevant to you. From today, parents' leave and parents' benefit will be extended from 7 weeks to 9. The measure was announced as part of Budget 2024 and comes into effect, as I mentioned, today. Right, we are joined on the programme now by Deputy Frank Feehan of Fine Gael. Good morning to you, Deputy.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners.
Right, okay, so break this down for us. What does this mean?
Well, parents' benefits worth €274 a week will increase from 7 weeks to 9 weeks for each parent if they qualify and a parent's benefit effectively is paid while you're on parent's leave from work if you have enough PRSI contributions. And effectively, let's say under these measures, you can now claim 9 weeks parent's leave if your child is under the age of two on August the 1st, 2024, or if your adopted child has been placed with you or your family less than 2 years on August the 1st, 2024. Effectively, what it's trying to do, the measures, will, I believe, will have a positive impact on the life for all families, especially those with newborn children. And we know that parents are working hard, and we want to continue to make life easier in these very difficult times.
And this is a payment from the state, isn't it? And presumably is or can be on top of annual leave. So this would be presumably unpaid leave, potentially from your employer, but still an income from the state whilst you spend this time with your family.
Yes, well, as I say, the measures will be available, but this measure will have an impact, a positive impact on life for all families, and hopefully evidence shows that children benefit from being cared for and spending time with their parents when they're very young. We saw during COVID how we all want to get now a life-work balance, and especially fathers and mothers, they want more time with their children and newborn children. It's just a small, I suppose, assistance in helping families cope that little bit better.
So just to be clear, because it's a little bit confusing for me, parental leave is different. That's unpaid leave that you might be entitled to, but this is parents' leave where there is a payment from the state. Am I correct?
Yes, and if you have paid the PRSI, and we all pay, most of the people that are working have enough PRSI contributions. And a lot of times, even myself, I'm a public servant, you wonder, what do we get back from the PRSI? Well, this is one thing that will be coming back if you have paid your PRSI contributions.
Can you break the time up as suits, or does it have to be taken consecutively?
I think it has been taken consecutively. I don't think there could be a situation that you could break it up, but I'd have to check that out that little bit further. But I think that you want to leave it as simple as possible, and I think.
Yep. Okay, we're losing the line there, Deputy. Thanks for outlining that with us, though. I'll let you go. Thank you very much for your time, Deputy Frank Feehan there of Fine Gael. On to some of your comments here now. Morning, Greg. Conor McGregor got a suspended sentence for speeding through Dublin, plus he had 20 previous convictions. What does the guard think of that? Well, I mean, I think you'd probably have to speak to a retired guard. It could be very hard for them to speak about it publicly. There is no doubt, I'm sure, a frustration amongst Angada Síochána as it relates to maybe the sentencing or what have you. That a lot of work goes into bringing someone before the courts, and for different reasons out of the guard's control. There's certain sentences they might not agree with. It might be thrown out, or it could be got shot of on a technicality. I would imagine that Gardaí, especially those put the work in bringing someone to the courts or getting a case as far as the courts, might be frustrated. It's not an insignificant sentence, a two-year driving ban. I just feel if I did that in Dublin, I'd be facing 6 months in the clink. I just feel that it feels like it would be the case. I travelled for the last 5 years once a week from Letterkenny to Lahey. I've been stopped by Gardaí twice only, and that was during COVID. Bikers drive very, very, very fast in the gap, and one last week passed all the cars at the lights at McGrory's Brae to get to the top of the traffic lights first. I've seen that firsthand myself. I'm not sure of the legality of this. I do seem to recall we checked in this before, and there's a name for when cyclists and motorbikes move up through traffic that stopped at lights. And I don't think it's illegal, you know. I really don't think it is illegal. There's an actual name on it. I'll check that out, or maybe one of our listeners listening will be able to help. I've never overtaken a motorbike. That's the only one thing I can say. And this is nothing against motorcyclists. I've never overtaken one, but one's never sat behind me, even when I'm sitting close to the speed limit. Do you get my point? I know someone who had no license, or with no license, is driving with no tax, and so on the car. The Gardaí did take the car off him, but he got the car back. All right, okay. Disappointed for boxer Aoife O'Rourke, her Polish opponent, warned 8 times for consistent holding and pushing. And I think there was a slap in there as well, wasn't there? Only penalised with 1 point deduction in round one. O'Rourke, clearly the better boxer, when allowed to judges, seemed to reward aggression. and Wolsick's desire to brawl. Whatever about the professional game, amateur boxing is about striking and defence, and if there's consistent holding and certainly slapping, which the Polish opponent was guilty of, I think Aoife's going to feel hard done by there. The one thing about boxing, though, the judging system will always frustrate, or often frustrate. The government plan to reduce speed limits, but that is not what road safety is about. Individuals who speed will speed regardless of speed limit. This is to make more money. Yeah, but there are those of us who drive at a speed on a road because that's the designated speed and we don't want to hold people up. I mean, I can think of three or four roads that definitely need to be dropped to 80. And I can think of another road that could be increased to 100. So I don't think a review of speed limits is necessarily a bad thing. A caller says, as long as we keep electing the same people from the same parties, we'll have the same outcome. Really, nothing will change. These parties are in power since the formation of the state. It's unbelievable that we've very little investment in the Northwest in the last 100 years. If we keep voting for the same parties, this listener believes nothing will change. Anne is with us, and we're going to talk about dogs on beaches. Hi, Anne.
Good afternoon, or good morning, rather. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Right, what's your experience, Anne?
So my experience was that I was absolutely gutted. I went to Loddon Beach in Bunkerana and I took my son who had travelled from England and he's on the autistic spectrum, and Theo was very excited about being on the beach. Mm. And unfortunately, most of the people didn't have their dogs on any leash. And firstly, I was taking pictures of Theo in the sand and a dog I heard somebody shouting their dog's name, went to, looked around and this dog appeared and went to urinate on my handbag, which was on the blanket in the ground. And I heard the owner shout his name repeatedly. The owner just managed to get there in time and basically shoved him aside, and people were giggling and someone walked past and they casually commented that the dog always does that. So that was a bit of upsetting to begin with. And then secondly, a really big and more powerful dog appeared on the beach about 10 minutes later, and he was completely unrestrainable by his owners. And for about 45 minutes, I watched him. His owners, he was completely off the lead. He wouldn't respond to any attempts to call him, and he was basically eyeballing my son, Theo, who is 12. And Theo wanted to walk in the water, and the dog was just... I was quite tense because the dog just did not look relaxed. And, the man was trying to call on and basically call his name in vain. And basically, the owner chased him around the beach. He had a phone, other family members who tried to come and tempt it with dog biscuits. And they never did manage to get that dog in the lead. And to me, it was obvious that if that dog had attacked Theo, there was nothing any of us could have done because the dog was totally out of control. And my family's from around the Inishowen and Inch area, and basically it would upset me. And basically I'm coming over from England, spending money in Inishowen, and it just felt that it's upsetting that people were taking over the beach. They were able to do this, and some of us weren't able to enjoy ourselves, and all we needed to do was keep it in the leash, really.
Well, that's what they're obliged to do, Anne. This is not you asking for good manners necessarily, and that would be good manners. The law states that they should be on a leash no longer than 2 metres on a blue flag beach. Of the blue flag beaches, they shouldn't be on the beach at all at this time of year.
Well, this is it. It was Loddon Beach, and I know that there are some rules about Lisfannan Beach. I wasn't sure if they did apply to Loddon Beach, but there was a sign, there were visible signs saying keep your dog under control, and it was clear that those dogs were not under control. And I just feel that when you shouldn't have to expect a dog to urinate on your bag or expect a dog to square up to your child. And my child, obviously, because he's on the autistic spectrum, probably has unusual sort of eye contact as well. And for all I know, I was kind of thinking, is that dog about to go for Theo? Because to be honest, I couldn't have intervened in any way. I could have tried, but I couldn't have done anything, and his owners clearly couldn't have. Mm-hmm. And, the relatives appeared with dog biscuits, and even they weren't able to get the dog under control either. So it just felt like maybe the authorities need more teeth or something, or need to kind of, monitor the situation, because 98% of the dogs on that beach just weren't in any kind of leash whatsoever. Yeah. And, it was just a very stressful situation, which would put you off.
I think I was
really excited. Yeah.
Of course, this is a brilliant experience for him to get in, to get the feel of the sand in his feet and his hands and what have you, but not especially when he's crouched down to be eye to eye with a dog that's not on a leash.
No.
Or any, even if it were on a leash.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like, people need to employ a bit more consideration too. You mean all of us, lots of people have vulnerabilities, and even if you don't, you just, you know, nobody needs a big unrestrained dog basically bounding around the beach for 45 minutes. And yeah, it just really upset me, and I just felt like something could have happened, and you know, there was, it just appeared like nothing, we wouldn't have been able to do anything about it at all.
Yeah, and there's some, I mean, listen, most dog owners, I'm going to say this, whether it's true or not, I believe it to be true, most dog owners are responsible, but I don't know if it's the love or how they view their pet, but they don't, some of them don't seem to think that other people don't like their dog, don't like any dogs, and want to just be able to relax in the brief summer that we tend to have on the beach without someone coming up, piddling on their back, licking at them, barking, being out of control. It's not fun. It's your dog, that's fine, but the space is for everybody to enjoy equally.
Absolutely. And I felt in that instance that they were tense as well. They were looking at the dog as if it was going to attack Theo. And basically, it was just that dog was the master of the beach. It was in control. None of the rest of us were. Yeah. But no, you're absolutely right. It's yeah, we all need to be able to enjoy it. And I think we, you know, we want diversity in the society. We want everyone to be, we want things to be inclusive. We want everyone to be able to visit the beach and enjoy it.
Yeah, dogs are not permitted on Blue Flag beaches. There's 12 of them between the hours of 12 and 7 p.m. at the moment. They are allowed outside of those hours, but must be on a leash. And they're not allowed in any public space, as far as I'm aware, off a leash. Carrickfinn, Coldaff, Downings, Fintra, Dunfanaghy, Marble Hill, Mervynarne, Rosnaula, Struve, Port Salon and Bundoran. No dogs allowed on those beaches from 12 to 7 p.m., until September 15th, and they must be on a leash outside of those hours, and they must be under control at all times anyway, on a leash.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I know it makes
well,
a lovely...
it doesn't feel like
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. No, I was just going to say it doesn't feel that that's enforced.
No, it's
and
not
it doesn't
enforced.
Feel that there's anyone who enforced it. So, you know, and I asked people, does the dog need to be in a lead? And they said, I don't know, and shrugged. Mm. So, you know... particularly the first one, I'd taken one handbag over with me from, you know, from England where I was visiting, you know, home, and basically to have a dog sort of like about to urinate in your handbag, it just felt really unpleasant. The whole experience, just London's such a beautiful place, it's such a beautiful resource, and it's very disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, outside of that, I'm not really... I must dig into the laws a little bit about whether they can be off a lead on certain beaches or not. Yours is not a Blue Flag beach, isn't it? Loddon's not Blue Flag.
Not that I know of, no.
Okay. I'll double check what the rules are outside of the Blue Flags. I kind of thought I knew, but I don't want to mislead anyone because it might affect people's enjoyment of the beach one way or other. But just, I think, a little bit of understanding of others is critical in this, Anne. I really believe, you know? Like, that,
yeah,
maybe
I agree
understand,
with you very much.
Understand that... your son travelled from England. He has autism. This was a big deal for him to get down onto the beach, and turned out to be quite a stressful situation. If not for him, certainly for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And to be honest, I think he had no idea of the danger that he could have been in.
Yeah,
I saw him looking at the dog, and you know, he wasn't aware. He was very vulnerable.
Yeah, okay,
so
actually, yeah, but the rule is, sorry, the dog must be under effectual control on the non-Blue Flag beaches, and that generally means a leash, but I don't think they're obliged to be on a leash, but chasing around them with doggy biscuits doesn't sound to me like effectual control, regardless of the situation. All right, Anne, listen, I hope it hasn't discouraged you too much, and you can get Theo down to that beach or another beach and enjoy the beautiful coastline. We were talking yesterday, for all of us, and particularly children, how wonderful the sand and the sea is, especially for children with autism. And obviously all children are different, but we want Theo to be able to go down and enjoy those experiences as well without fear. We have now on the programme with us Owen McNeill, co-founder and editor of The Ditch. Thanks for rejoining us, Owen. I do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Pleasure.
Now, you published more documents. If we don't mind, we'll go back 2 days, if that's okay, whereby it was revealed, or it emerged, that neither Donegal County Council or Cabinet Minister Charlie McConnellogue knew who was responsible for defective concrete quarry checks. So what's the background to this? What does the documentation you got your hands on tell us?
This shows it was back in May 2021, so it's right in the middle of the mica crisis. And there were a number of protests in the county about Cassidy's and their continued supply of blocks, even though after the findings against them. And it was in the middle of May, there was this flurry of frantic emails between council officials, between John McLaughlin, who's the chief executive of Donegal County Council, and a number of council engineers. And John McLaughlin kicked this off and said that he'd been speaking to Agriculture Minister Charlie McConnellogue, and McConnellogue had a meeting with a mica group, and he wanted to know effectively who was responsible for quality checks.
And I think that time there was at least one big Zoom meeting, I believe, where there was 200 or 300 people in attendance. Is the timing of that coincidental? Was that the scramble for info, I wonder, sort of in case that question came up during that town hall meeting on Zoom?
Effectively, yeah. I mean, we could speculate about that. Yeah. It certainly lines up, and it certainly seems as if Charlie McConnellogue wanted to have an answer to this question. And as a result of these questions that McConnellogue had for John McLaughlin, John McLaughlin sent an email to a number of council engineers where he effectively asked, what's the story here? What have we done? As far as there's an EU regulation, it's called Regulation 305-2011, which effectively deals with the market surveillance, as the EU calls it, of construction materials. And after John McLaughlin sent this mail to his colleagues, the council engineers took it up. And look, you know, again, there's a certain level of subjectivity here, but it certainly seems that there was the engineers seem to be unsure about the council's responsibility.
But the Department of Housing was quite certain who was responsible.
Yeah, the Department of Housing, that was confirmed in 2022. The Department of Housing had said that local authorities are responsible for the market surveillance as far as this EU regulation goes. But certainly in these mails, you know, in 2021, and, you know, to be clear, you know, this is a long way into the mica crisis. I mean, the mica action group was established in 2014 and had been raising this issue for quite some time. You had mails from council officials. I mean, there was one line where a senior engineer said, I seem to remember you saying something about the council's responsibilities here. And then as a result of this, his engineering colleague put together a one-pager and a PowerPoint, which was then sent back to John McLaughlin. And, you know, there was one line, you know, where it said, it'll take 5 minutes to go through the PowerPoint, but it's worth your time, you know. And this is, to be clear, this is all happening against the backdrop of the European Commission saying that Ireland has failed to comply with its EU regulation 305-2011 concerning the market surveillance of quarry materials.
And Owen, is it clear if the surveillance was ongoing, but, you know, maybe, you know, one part, you know, one hand wasn't talking to the other? Or was there few letters or inspections actually taking place as per obligations?
Well, this is the thing too, you know, so to kind of work our way backwards here, you know, this is in 2021. To go back to 2017, which is a story that we published yesterday, this is further correspondence between the Department of Housing and Donegal County Council, where Damien English, former junior minister, until something happened to him, had met with the MICA Action Group in Donegal County Council offices. And again, you know, this is, the MICA Action Group had raised this issue with them, you know, who was responsible for the market surveillance of quarry materials. Now, in this correspondence, the Department of Housing then had to send a letter to Donegal County Council. In this instance, it was the Director of Services, Liam Ward, and the Department of Housing, it was a senior advisor in the department, had to ask Liam Ward, what have you guys done about market surveillance? And you can see, you know, again, to engage in a little bit of speculation, you know, there was some of the language used in this letter, you know, in 2017, where you had this senior advisor in the Department of Housing saying to Donegal County Council, as you are aware, you are responsible for market surveillance. Now, their own minister seemingly wasn't able to answer that question when he met with the MICA Action Group. But so you had the Department of Housing asking Donegal County Council, which is the body responsible for these checks, what have you guys done? And the Director of Services, he writes back and he says, when this EU regulation was introduced back in 2013, Donegal County Council sent 25 letters to concrete and steel manufacturers. And he attached one of these letters and he says, this speaks for itself.
Mm. And he sorry to cut across, Owen, it's just we're approaching 11 here. So we know now this week, of course, the European Commission has taken legal action against Ireland for its failure to conduct market surveillance on construction materials. I mean, this arguably could be evidence in that inquiry.
I would have thought so. I mean, look, to go back again to around the start of this month when we published the Attorney General's advice to government on the state MICA scheme. Very important thing to remember in all this, and this would chime with the experience of people who have been affected by the crisis. Paul Gallagher he really stressed this point. He said that the state cannot accept liability for this crisis. It cannot use terms like redress. Very important for the state. And again, this is in advice where Paul Gallagher was advising government on how to limit the state's financial exposure. He said very clearly, do not accept liability for this. And then he goes on to say, now, the state could be liable if it was found to have not followed EU regulations. But in his words, I am not aware of any such regulations. Now, you have the European Commission step in this week. And look, the language that the European Commission uses and also the way that these infringement procedures work, according to the European Commission, like the European Commission isn't saying the state allegedly failed to comply with this regulation. The Commission is saying it didn't comply with this regulation. Mm. It's on the Irish state now to respond to that. But certainly you have, in this correspondence between the Department of Housing and Donegal County Council, equally the correspondence within Donegal County Council and what the chief executive said about a cabinet minister and Charlie McConnell. And then on top of that, the very legal advice that the state received and built this scheme around, it all points quite clearly to a failure to comply with this regulation that the state is accused of not following.
One last question, and if you can, it might be difficult to detach yourself from sort of being the publisher of this, but as a journalist more generally, given the fact that tens of thousands of people are affected by this, it could be many more, we don't know, and given the fact that we have a multi-billion euro scheme in place, and look at the scrutiny, for example, that the cost of the children's hospital has gotten, we could be talking many, many times that in this. Are you surprised, other than yourselves, because you are national, international, it's online, the lack of national interest in this story?
I'd like to say it was that I'm surprised, but to be honest, you know, this is something that myself and my colleagues would talk a good deal about. Personally, I think that anywhere outside of Dublin is woefully underserved by the national media. I look, oftentimes you'll turn on prime time, or even listening to national broadcast media, and you're kind of going, is this the Dublin Gazette or the Dublin Democrat? You know, there. I do think that Dublin-based stories are overrepresented in national media, and certainly, if not for people like yourselves, stories like this wouldn't be getting that coverage. Certainly for our part, not just with this MICA story. It's been 3 years of the ditch, and again, something that myself and my colleagues would talk over.
I think you have to be outside the bubble to see the woods for the trees. Yeah. And that's why I think, you know, the likes of yourselves and local media, local newspapers, because outside of that, the bubble, I don't know how much a factor that is, but it seems significant. Owen McNeill, thanks as always. Take care of yourself. On the Ditch, search that out and you'll find the work from the guys there.